It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, Mr. Bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
All right, we let him sleep in a little bit because it was a late trade. Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Good morning, it's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy at Wanaka Country Club right now for the 100 holes. If you'd like to donate, search 100 holes, and then there's a search bar right there for Jeremy's page if you want to donate to his individually. Paul, was that the late trade? It's not uncommon. It's happened in the league, right, where you get a trade at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
I've had it happen, yes. And where were you? I was trying to call you at 1 o'clock in the morning saying, all right, what time am I on?
I do not have my ringer on at 1 o'clock. Sal does. Sal woke up to it.
You could have called me. I would have woke up.
Sal,
I would have been mad
there
at you for calling me, but I would have woke up.
Oh, I knew I'd be hearing from you folks before when I went to bed. I go, yep, they'll be calling. Although, this time I was up by now since it's 9 o'clock.
All right.
When Reinhardt, and it wasn't even announced then. We were down at the arena. That was 1 in the morning when we knew Reinhardt had been traded, but we didn't get the official word until the next day.
Mm-hmm.
When Danny Briere became a Buffalo Sabre, I got a call from the Sabres at 12:45, which was the same time they announced this trade on Twitter. So I had gotten at the same time a 12:45 call. I believe Briere played for the Coyotes that night. And that's one of the reasons why they waited on it. So it's not the first time I've gotten notification like that, but it certainly does not happen very often.
I remember being on the air that night for it was the NHL draft, right?
Yeah.
For draft coverage when Reinhardt gets traded, and thinking why, because there was a long period of time between when it was reported and when it was announced. And we were, I mean, you know how it is, Paul. Like, you're in day two of draft coverage, and you only know so much about the prospects. So instead, we went off on a scavenger hunt to figure out why the trade wasn't announced, and we were looking up, like, Finnish players from Florida that might not be awake yet. Like, oh, they haven't announced it because this guy's still asleep in Finland. I think Lundell was actually the player that might have ended up being pretty nice, but
speaking
anyways.
Of NHL draft coverage, we will have all of that for you starting Friday night. 7 p.m., Brian Colzio and Brayton Wilson will anchor our coverage. Paul will obviously be on site down at One Bills Drive. We'll have Zach Jones anchoring coverage from back here as well, with making sure that you have any news, breaking news, things like that that's going on digital and social. Zach, Paul, Evan DePasquale, everybody on hand here at WGR. All right, Paul, you've said many times, hey, listen, it's not scoring, it's defense this team needs. They have to be better there. They got what we think is a guy that's going to help on the blue line, but they did it by giving up a top six forward who's a goal scorer, a 23-year-old, and we know everything that's been surrounding J.J. Paterka. So how do you evaluate this trade?
Well, I think the basic problem is here, and it's still a problem here, is that the Sabres are still in this position 6 years into a regime that players want out. And then they are forced to trade players. You're not really in a position of great power when you're forced to trade somebody. And it just keeps happening that players want out. And that, to me, is the problem. That we're still, the Buffalo Sabres are still in a position where players want out. And then they're forced to trade them. I think Kesserling is a good defenseman, and I saw every game he played for Team USA that won the gold medal, teammates with Tage Thompson. I thought he was excellent in that tournament. He is what they need. He's big. He's strong. He's not afraid to mix it up. I don't think he needs a team meeting to tell him to arrive when one of his players gets laid out. As I learned more about him and read more about him I've seen him play also, he was developed the right way. He's 23 years old. He has spent time in the American Hockey League to get his development, and now is starting at 23 years old to become a good NHL defenseman. Of course, a right-handed shooting defenseman. And remember when Rasmus Ristolainen was traded, and I was floored that the Sabres got a number one pick out of it. And it was simply because right-handed defensemen in the NHL are hugely valued, hugely overvalued, you might say, in Rasmus Ristolainen's case. And teams covet them. It's something the Sabres need. This fills a need that the Sabres have. Doan, I basically envision him riding shotgun with Beck Malenstein. You now have two holes, in my opinion, in your top six forwards. I thought you had one anyway because I just don't think Zach Benson should be in the top six. He doesn't produce as a top six. And I thought you needed one there. Now you need a second one. But I think you've also filled a hole on your defense because I think Kesserling is to a point now in his career where he can play in your top four and be a right-handed shot defenseman and maybe be that guy that can grow up with Owen Power and help him. I don't object to them getting Kesselring, but, you know, where the real problem is, it's not, well, they got a horrible return if that's how people feel about it. It's that they're even having to trade a player like Paterka at all, that a young player like that already wants out to go with Eichel, to go with Reinhardt, to go with, you know, the list goes on and on. You know, all these people that want out. And you shouldn't be 6 years into trying to rebuild a team and having guys still like, I want out of here.
Paul, you mentioned a couple of times there, talking like the Sabres had to trade Paterka. Do you feel like they, because listening to like Friedman a couple of times in the last week has been saying the Sabres do not want to trade Paterka, but they're listening, and if it would take an offer that, I forgot the exact wording he used. I keep using blow your socks off. I don't think it was that strong, but basically the Sabres, they won't do it unless there is an offer that really forces them to. Does that feel like what happened here to you? Do you feel like they traded Paterka because they felt like they just had to move him? Or do you think these two players for Kesserling, that's why I got to do it?
I think they like Kesserling. I think they should like Kesserling. But I don't think it's like, oh, wait a minute, that's the trade right there. I think it got to a point of no return. I think they wanted to keep him. I think they were holding out hope that he would change his mind or his agent would change his mind and that they could convince him that this is the place to be. But it sometimes gets to a point where you're like, well, it's not happening. He's not going to change his mind, and we're going to have to get rid of him. Do you want a pouting J.J. Paterka on your team all year long? I mean, because you didn't trade him this year, how much does that help? And let's be honest too. I've been reading, you know, people. Some are disappointed the Sabres didn't get the fourth overall pick. Are you kidding me? They didn't get the fourth overall pick for Eichel or Reinhardt. J.J. Paterka is not getting you the fourth overall pick.
I think there's a sentiment that maybe people thought they could have swapped picks 4 and 9.
Yeah, maybe.
Trade up 5 picks.
Right.
Maybe, but you still have to remember that J.J. Paterka is not a complete player in the NHL. Mm-hmm. He's not just, well, he's not very good in his own end. He's horrendous in his own end, and numbers will bear that out. I mean, he does not have good numbers at all, and I've had folks tell me who are heavy into analytics that the Sabres are better off without him, with as bad as he is defensively.
But this is part of the
hard
issue.
It's hard to ignore 55 goals in 2 years, but you know when you're how many if you know you're not holding your weight at the other end. Now that, Sal, is also something he can fix,
right?
If he wants to.
That's part of the
really
issue
wants
I have.
To work at it.
He's 23, Paul. Like we've seen guys. What do we hear about Mitch Marner forever? And yet he's getting Selke votes, right? Whether it's justified or not to some people, he is. We've heard this about. And look, I'm feeling better about this trade as the morning goes on. I'll be honest with you. I really am. I'm liking a lot of the things I'm hearing about Kesselring and what he can do. No doubt about it. But he's 23, he's an ascending player, and all these things that about not being good in his own end. Guy's mature. I'm watching Sam Bennett run around the ice with the cup. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this guy's been in the league 11 years. Look how long it took him to get to the player that everyone thought that maybe he could be someday.
Well, Sal, the Sabres, I've obviously felt that way because they wanted to keep him.
Yeah. What do you think about the contract? Well, I'll ask you that. What do you think about the contract he signed? If you woke up this morning, if you got the alert that said the Sabres signed J.J. Paterka to 5 years, 7.7, Paul, what would have been your reaction?
I would have been fine with that. I was thinking low sevens, maybe. That it got into the high sevens would not have shocked me. He would be making more than Tage Thompson, but Tage Thompson signed a contract a couple of years ago, and values go up. You know, when you sign a contract, I mean, look at what Alex Tuch is making. Well, at the time, it probably didn't seem like, well, you're getting screwed here. But, you know, with the production that they've gotten from Alex Tuch, it's been a bargain for the last couple of years because contracts change as go up. So, no, I wouldn't have said that was ridiculous. I was kind of thinking that's about where it would land. Not quite there, but about where that would land. And goal scorers do get paid. I mean, Jeff Skinner got $9 million. Jeff Skinner never did figure out the defensive zone. You know, but he did score 40 goals 1 year. So if you're getting a guy who scores 40 goals, maybe you can forget about the other part of it. So, no, you're absolutely right, and I think the Sabres agree with you also. That's why they wanted to keep him, they felt that he's going to be able to figure it out. But when you're looking at what you got coming back, you got to talk about what is, not what could be maybe. And what is right now is he is a liability in his own end. But you're right, that can change, and that's up to him. He can change it.
Yeah, as we figure out, too, Paul, like how this happened, you tell me like where I should land on this, because the 5 years, $7.7 million, I woke up this morning after seeing the trade and seeing the destination, wondering more if money was at all a part of the... Adam's talking the other day about how you can't make a guy happy just by paying him. So thinking about like, oh, I wonder, were the Sabres willing to go there? Was there a contract where Paterka would have said, okay, I'm in with the Sabres? Because, and again, the source of that for me is where he ended up going. He didn't go to a big market. He didn't go to L.A. He didn't go to New York. He didn't go to a perennial winner. He didn't go to Carolina. He didn't go to Tampa. He went to Salt Lake City in a group of players that's missed the playoffs 11 of 12 years. So, like, or is it just that it's that bad here that Utah is now, like, a much better destination than Buffalo is?
I think that's an accurate statement. But, you know, his agent, anytime you heard, or a lot of the time when you heard where he might land, it's all, you know, New York Rangers. Even the incorrect report at the trade deadline, New York Rangers, you know, and that to me is the agent feeding it, you know, that's, but the agent or anybody else, he has no trade protection. So Sabres could trade him wherever they wanted to trade him. And, Utah is looking to improve in their goal scoring and they're, you know, they have salary cap space that they can do it. So, you know, that's where it wound up as far as that went. So, it didn't surprise me where it went, but again, you know, Utah wasn't a heavy rumored place for him to go. That's again why, you know me, I just don't, you know, like to pay a lot of attention to rumors, but you know, it was, that's where he wound up, and
yeah.
Yeah, they were never on the rumor card.
That's
there.
What I mean. Like, all it's I guess I'm trying to figure out is like, how did it end up being Utah for him? Like, what ended up being Paterka's real motivation when he didn't choose like one of the top, like, because again, the Sabres could have traded him wherever they wanted, but he didn't have to sign wherever. He chose to be there for 5 years. So was it the money? Was it the city? Was it, you know, is it just that team
is Lindy Ruff?
Is it, well, that's another good question. Is it coaching? Is it,
I just feel, I feel,
is, it, is, Ruff, it, is it anywhere, but it could have been, I'll just go anywhere, but here.
Lindy Ruff publicly talked about how, you know, Paterka's poor defensive play, and a lot of players don't like that, to be publicly called out, and you know, and we had talked about this, I don't know, within the last week, I think I talked to you both about it. Is it possible that Paterka and his agent don't want to deal with the Sabres anymore because they're at an impasse in the contract negotiation? Is that the reason he wants to be traded? We don't know. Is it Lindy Ruff? Is it he doesn't believe in the organization? Is it the losing? We just don't know what his problem is, and we'll have to see at some point if he ever addresses it. You're right. I mean, it's certainly right to speculate. It's possible, but then my thought is, why were they trying so desperately to convince him that he wants to be a Sabre, knowing how much it was going to cost them to keep him?
Right.
I'm with Joe where it's like not a disagreement type with Joe, but I agree. Like when Joe's wondering, we hear all this stuff about big market, and then he gets moved to Utah. No, to me it was money. This is money. Like that's what I come down to. I think it's money. I don't think the Sabres wanted to pay him that kind of money. We all say we would have done it. And I have a theory, Paul. I have a theory here. Mm-hmm. This contract he signs very much screams like an offer sheet type of contract. I think the Sabres knew an offer sheet was coming. Maybe Utah told them, hey, we're going to give him an offer sheet. And the Sabres are like, well, guess what? We don't want to pay him that, but we don't want a first, second, and third round pick. So you know what? Let's just make a deal. And I think that this is what this feels like to me.
It doesn't to me, just because I just think offer sheets don't happen all that often. And first of all, you have to have your own picks. Like you have to have your own number one. You have to have your own number two. And you have to have your own number three. You know, to be able to make that, you know, that type of an offer. And I'm just checking right now, and Utah does not have, do they?
The picks that needed for the...
I'm looking right now.
Where the money
was. Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Yeah,
they do?
I just feels to me like something like that. I mean, remember back in the day when the Bills put the franchise tag on Peerless Price, but they did it only because they knew, hey, we'll just, instead of going through this process, we'll do that, and then we'll make a deal with somebody, right? That happens. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it feels to me like maybe, hey, they kind of knew this was coming. Maybe Utah made it known and said, like we've been saying, Paul, we don't want prospects back for the Sabres. I don't think that's what they want. They want to get better. Hey, you know what? Instead of having him go somewhere, we don't want to pay him the money, but we don't want the prospects. We don't want the picks. Let's make a deal here. You want him? Give us a couple players that we can use.
Yeah, but
there is there's a difference though between a team telling you they're going to do it and then them actually doing it.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like,
correct.
It's a little bit of, okay, you're going to offer sheet him. Well, I'll wait. Let's see if you actually offer sheet him.
That's right.
You could do that.
And Friedman saying, you know, that the Sabres definitely don't want to trade him and doing everything they can to try to make sure that that doesn't happen. Wouldn't say that the Sabres weren't willing to pay that. I don't know. And as I said, we've already speculated within the last week that is that the problem? Is there an impasse in what we're talking about that, you know, they decided that, well, you know, we have to trade him because there's not, the Paterkas decided that, well, he needs to be traded because, you know, it's just not going to happen. By the way, Utah does not have their own first round pick.
Okay.
So they could not offer sheet him.
I guess there goes my theory.
Because the Bruins would have been, if you invert the standing, it's San Jose, Chicago, Nashville, Boston, and Utah has the fourth pick.
Okay.
That's not their pick.
Paul, now that Paterka is traded, and you mentioned earlier, and we actually talked about this the other day, that now it feels like there are two holes in the Sabres' top six. Do you feel like whatever they trade Bo Byram for, assuming they do make that deal eventually, it's more imperative now than it was before that like they got to get a forward back in that deal?
Yeah. I mean, we already thought that they needed a top six forward. Zach Benson, I like his game. It's not that I don't like his game and the way he plays, but if you're in the top six, you have to produce. And right now at his age and you know the way his body is right now, he doesn't produce. You need guys in the top six that produce. So to me, you already had a hole there, and now you've got a second hole there. You have filled the hole maybe you were looking for on defense, but you know now you need a couple of top six forwards. In my mind, you need two. You need more than one. So you have other assets. I mean, you could maybe take your ninth pick, and with a couple of prospects or whatever, you can get one that way.
Mm-hmm.
You can maybe get one in the Byram trade. So there are other ways they can go about to get what they need there. They felt like they got what they needed on defense, right? I mean, he's exactly what they've been talking about that they want, you know, a right-handed shooting defenseman who's big, who's strong, who brings something to the table nobody else on that defense brings. And that's, you know, what they got there. So, all right, you've filled that, but you've left a hole here. So, I mean, now you've got to go fill that hole because, you know, if you're going to make the playoffs, you can't have all these holes that you have. And so that's, I think, what they're still going to have to do. And, of course, free agency could maybe, you know, come into that picture too. But then you run into what you ran into here. Well, the Sabres keep losing, and they keep losing badly. And here we are again where the Buffalo Sabres have to, you know,
trade one of their best players to a team that didn't exist like 5 years ago.
And yeah, I'm an idiot. I said Utah doesn't have their pick. Yes, they do. They won the lottery.
Oh, the lottery.
Yeah, they're in the lottery. And by the way, I'm such an idiot
that it just hit me. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We're sitting here talking off the cuff and
I also want to make
things up.
I also want to make a point.
Josh is smiling for potential open use in the future.
I also want to make a point here of the offer sheet thing. If you do sign a player to an offer sheet, the picks wouldn't come until the following year. You can't because it's after the draft, right? July 1st would be... You know, you offer sheet season, right? So it's not this year's pick anyway.
Yeah, you have to have your first round pick next year.
And by the way, Utah does have that, and they do have their first, second, and third for the next several years. They could. That's independent. It doesn't matter. Anyway, just a theory I had, but go ahead.
All right.
Yeah, I just wanted to correct that.
You got it.
All right. Draft tomorrow. We haven't really talked about the draft much at all, Paul, but there's been things that have caused us to, you know, push that off to tomorrow. So we'll talk about the draft tomorrow. So thanks for being on, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Well, maybe we can talk about a trade tomorrow, too.
Or there'll be a trade tomorrow we'll talk about.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Paul.
Yep.
And from TSN, our hockey insider Darren Dreger joins us now on the heels of big news from Buffalo last night, sending Paterka to Utah in exchange for Kesselring and Doan. Darren, your immediate and now reflection time on the deal from last night. What did you make of it?
Well, it was interesting, right? So we got wind of it probably around 9:30 Eastern that there was something in the works, but pinning it down as to what it exactly was going to be was the challenging part, as is the case pretty much on every trade chase that we do. At one point, wondered whether or not Sean Durzi would be part of it coming back. And then, as it turned out, that wasn't the case. There was some speculation as to whether there was a flipping of picks that was going to be included in all this. And then as it got a bit later and it got later, Kesselring and Doan's name surfaced. But again, you know, that was unconfirmed. It felt like somewhere along the line there was a bit of a snag in the negotiation, which is why it took maybe longer to wrap up. But, you know, in the end, it seems fairly orchestrated, I would say, by Alan Walsh and J.J. Paterka because, you know, almost immediately and not coincidentally, Paterka gets his contract extension with Utah. But what's interesting about it is, and look, there are critics out there. There are critics across the league. And I'm talking about other hockey operations departments, not necessarily general managers, but rivals, right? Who would look at this deal and go, geez, okay, they give up a 23-year-old winger, a pretty highly regarded player. And yeah, they get back a right shot defenseman who's a physical player. So he's going to bring in some bite in Michael Kesselring. And they get back Josh Doan, who's a high character player. You know, is he a bottom six? Can he slide into the top six? Eventually, don't know. There's a level of uncertainty. Is that enough for Paterka? And I guess my immediate reaction would be yes. Because it was also very evident that J.J. Paterka did not want to stay in Buffalo and wasn't going to extend in Buffalo. So are you better to wait or looking at what you're looking at, which is another season of uncertainty, try and make your team better right now so that you're not dealing with all of the negativity anymore. You're dealing with a more positive outlook moving forward. So in that sense, I think that Buffalo did well.
Do you feel like it happened quickly in one day or with, Kevin Adams' press conference 2 days ago, not answering if Paterka had asked for a trade and saying there's a lot of, you know, misinformation, but now we kind of know that that was happening now and the same for Bo Byram potentially. But do you think like it happened quickly in one day after the presser and everything, or this was for weeks had been kind of worked on?
Well, I don't think that something like this happens quickly. So, I mean, and how many conversations? The Paterka speculation has been out there for months, if not longer. And doesn't it feel like every segment I'd come on with you guys, you know, at least a couple of times a month, we'd ask about Paterka. And I'd have to take Buffalo's position, which was obviously Kevin Adams' position, in saying, look, we're not keenly interested in trading J.J. Paterka. Don't know where this speculation is coming from. There's no active trade conversation. But anytime you have something like that, as open and as vocal publicly as it was, well, guess what happens? Teams are calling, and they're constantly calling. And then there's another wave of speculation, and different teams start calling, right? So I think it just got to a point where, you know, Adams wisely just said, look, I'm not interested in trading him, but make me a deal that makes sense, that I think is, let's have a conversation about it. And then so it eventually evolved into where they get to. But what's more interesting for me now is how we move forward. And I can tell you guys, when that deal was finally announced, confirmed last night, wee hours of the morning, smiles on the faces of general managers with interest in Bo Byram. Right? Because all along, Bo Byram was the more likely of those two guys to get traded. But the response from Adams was, if I'm trading Bo Byram, I need a right shot defenseman coming back the other way as part of the package. Well, he gets the right shot defenseman in Kesselring. So now all of these general managers who have interest in Byram, but didn't want to have to give up one of their own right shot D, are kind of trying to look at things creatively. Okay, well, maybe we're back in on this with Bo Byram. And so the list of teams that would have interest in Bo Byram, it's pretty extensive. I mean, it's 6, 7, 8 teams deep, legitimate players for Bo Byram at this stage.
Do you think that's next for them? Or do you
I
see
do.
Them?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And the reason why is contractual, right? No different than Paterka. Maybe a different approach by the agent. Alan Walsh represents J.J. Paterka. Darren Ferris now represents Bo Byram. Ferris isn't going to hold Adams and the Buffalo Sabres' feet to the fire right now. But a year from now, oh boy, look out, right? Because now you're right in the wheelhouse. The Ferris wheel is what we call it. Because the player has arbitration rights now. So that gives you 1 year. What do you think is going to happen a year from now? You know, he's just going to say, no, we're going to free agency a year after that. So, you know, let's see how it plays out. I mean, Bo Byram is such a valued piece. You know, I'll name some of the teams. Ken Holland and the Los Angeles Kings would love to find a way to acquire Bo Byram. You know, they often will go with five forwards on defense. You know, you've got Doughty there as a big part of that power play. But can you not see Bo Byram helping out the LA Kings power play? Vegas. Oh, yeah. Kelly McCrimmon is keen on Bo Byram. I don't know how he's going to be able to manage all of it, because there's never ending speculation that he's going to find a way to sign Mitch Marner as an unrestricted free agent. You know, he's already extended some players there in Saad and Riley Smith. So he's going to have to move out some bodies. But that kind of takes me back to what I said in the acquisition of Kesselring as a right shot D-man. So now does that open the door for McCrimmon and the Vegas Golden Knights again to get a little bit more creative? Mm-hmm. Could you see Nick Hague and something else and something else? You know, sweeten it to a point where you become a legitimate trade contender for Bo Byram. So there's LA, there's Vegas. St. Louis, I know, is interested in Bo Byram. Philadelphia reportedly has had interest. It was warm, then it was a little bit more cool. Maybe it warms up now again because of the ask. The return to Colorado, I think Colorado, weirdly enough, has interest in reacquiring Bo Byram. What about the Toronto Maple Leafs? I mean, Brad Treliving is involved in everything. So I could probably name about five other teams on top of that, but I don't think it'll go beyond the group that I've already mentioned.
Well, there's a few teams that you didn't mention that I am interested because of that right side defenseman. Duffer's changed my mind on it. At first I was like, the Sabres are all set on defense. And then he's like, whoa, wait a second. they still could use a top pair defenseman to play with Dahlin, another right shot that could play there. And so Rasmus Anderson in Calgary, Noah Dobson with the Islanders, Ekblad maybe as a UFA. Is there, you know, some traction in Anderson and Dobson most likely to be traded? Ekblad's a UFA, so that would be July 1.
Yeah, so I'd keep a real close eye on Noah Dobson and the New York Islanders. There's rumblings as we're sitting here live right now that, yeah, there could be something cooking there. To where? I've heard Utah only in a wildly speculative fashion, and I'm okay with that because that's where we're at in this window leading up to tomorrow's draft and then ultimately through a busy weekend that takes us into free agency. Bit of a head scratcher for me, but again, it's contractual with the New York Islanders, right? He's a nice player. He's a nice player. Now over to Rasmus Anderson, the Calgary Flames. Tons of interest in him, as you would expect. The messaging that I get back from the Flames, though, is a little bit different in that they're like, okay, well, there's not necessarily a rush. You know, we do have time. Well, everybody has time when you've got the player under contract for one more year. But if you're seeing the return on some of these defensemen, these pieces, maybe that's enough. Or maybe it's enough for a team that doesn't land a defenseman. Like, you know, wherever Bo Byram ends up, again, assuming he is the next chip to fall here from Buffalo's perspective, the teams that miss out there, you know, they can't risk free agency. They can't. You know, Aaron Ekblad is either going to stay with the Florida Panthers or maybe lands in Utah. Okay, well, there's another, like, Utah's collecting players all of a sudden now. But I give Billy Armstrong and that group credit in Utah because they were being super aggressive. But those two defensemen in Dobson and Rasmus Anderson, they're in the same conversation, maybe not equal in player, but in terms of trade interest, they're in the same conversation as Bo Byram at this stage.
The CBA, the next one, close to being accepted?
Yeah, real close, right? I think Frank Cervelli reported that the expectation is that they could make an announcement as early as tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, what, are we supposed to be drinking out of a fire hose on Friday? Like, you know, we're in this whirlwind.
Not like you haven't done it.
I'm good with the trade speculation and the draft picks getting flipped. I mean, I've lived that since 1998. But to do a news dump on a Friday, which includes a new collective bargaining agreement, like, what are we doing? But that sounds like what they're doing. And that's fine. I mean, just get it over with. Here's an interesting twist to all of this, though, because probably what you want to know is, okay, well, what are some of the more intriguing details and changes that can be contained in the CBA? You know, there are a couple that I think are noteworthy. The one that is most noteworthy to most, I think, will probably be some form of a salary cap in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is going to be to dissuade the teams from doing what we've seen historically with LTIR usage, and then a player just magically pops into the playoffs. This year's example, Evander Kane and the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, the assurance around the trade deadline when there was rumor around Evander Kane potentially being traded was that there's zero chance he is going to be ready or available to the Oilers game one of the playoffs. We have the medical records. He's not physically going to be able to do that. Well, not only was he ready, I mean, he looked like he'd been vacationing and skating every day at the same time simultaneously for the last 6 months. I mean, he was like, boom, like right out of a cannon, Evander Kane. Now, he didn't look that great in the Stanley Cup final, but how do you argue with the success of that player? So Edmonton could come under fire here. The league hasn't officially decided. So that'll be one item. The revenue share plan will be another item. I don't know what it looks like. It could be better for smaller market clubs. But Commissioner Bettman literally warned everyone inside that boardroom yesterday in LA at the Board of Governors meetings, if any of this information leaks out and I find out who leaked it, I'm coming for your head.
All know that something is being leaked out because apparently 84-game regular season, which makes sense because it balances four in a division, three in the other division, your conference two. Instead of 7 years.
Maybe it's coming from the player's side, though.
Maybe it is.
Maybe.
Instead of 7 years UFAs and 8 years for your own players, looks like it would be 6 years UFAs and 7 years for your own players. So one less years. There's a few things in there, but
I don't even know how much that matters anymore. It you know, like the top guys, more and more what we're seeing, and we're talking about the top guys, the elite level guys, they're less concerned about that seventh or eighth year. Most of them, not all of them. Some guys like the financial security and getting that mega deal. But also, fellas, as you know, there are lots of players. I wouldn't be surprised to see McDavid do it, maybe Marner do it. Follow the Auston Matthews routine where you take a four-year extension going into your final year, which equates to five, so that you can continue to bite more out of that salary cap with that salary cap increasing. So we'll have tons of details on this I was going to say Friday, but I guess Friday's tomorrow. I don't even know what day
and
it is.
We know you're drinking out of a fire hose. Good luck with that. We'll see you next week.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Jack Jones, Derek Kramer hanging here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're talking things. JJ Paterka, no longer a Buffalo Sabre, traded late last night.
Late last night, by the way.
Kept
thanks.
A lot of us from our comfy beds.
Yeah, by the way, thanks for that. I really appreciate the fact of I'm playing in the 11-day power play tonight, and I didn't really get the sleep that I would have preferred.
I was just laying in my bed like the photo you get of like can't sleep at 3 a.m. Why? And it's the person with the full brightness of their phone on as they're laying in bed. That was me.
Yeah, that was also me.
I wasn't even sitting up either. I was laying down.
I couldn't go to bed after that.
Yeah.
So thanks. Really appreciate that.
I went right to bed. I saw the return. I was like, all right, see y'all in the AM. Bye. Have fun.
But 11-day power play. Team WGR takes the ice at 6 o'clock tonight, by the way.
Very, very exciting.
Oh, and you scoring tonight? He's not listening.
He's into the immediately perked up.
Oh, and you're scoring tonight?
Oh, I'm going to score tonight.
You're in net, though, right?
Yeah.
But you're scoring tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Love that attitude. Josh, you scoring tonight?
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Love that. Much better from last week. Go ahead. Give me that question.
I was going to say, am I scoring tonight? Are you scoring tonight?
Oh, you better. Bet. I'm leading the team in goals tonight. Let's go.
Leading the team in goals tonight. Two.
Two would still do it.
Still do it.
Amongst GR staff, our helpers of Alan Davis's buddies, they're much better than we all are.
I won't be scoring tonight, though. I will be working.
You will be here.
As I do every year for the 11th.
Also, I think this is the perfect time to tweet that picture of Zach skating.
Oh, absolutely. Man.
It is a tough look. I don't know where those sweatpants are. That was my big takeaway from that picture was I do not know where those sweatpants are. Speaking of the 11-day power play, it is a very... very busy week of the NHL. We also have the draft coming up. Our own Brayton Wilson, him and Brian Coase are going to be part of day one NHL coverage. Brayton does have his mock draft up at our website, WGR550.com. Coverage of the NHL draft on WGR is brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Fiegel Carr and Joyce Shore Border Attorneys and by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods. 803-0550, the number to call. We are sitting here all morning taking your calls. We'll also be checking in with Jeremy White. It's about 20 minutes or so to get a check-in on the 100 holes of golf over at Wanaka Country Club. We'll be talking again to him in the later segment, but we are talking to you now. And first up in this segment, let's go to Reed on the line. Reed, how are we doing on this fine morning?
I'm not doing that great, you know, being a Kevin.
I'm sorry.
Being a Kevin Adams hater, but and a JJ Paterka lover, and that was the one decision that he made back when he got the job back in 2020. That he got gifted with that 34th pick. So not a big fan of that because that makes zero sense and loses all credibility of him to me as a professional. And especially if you guys mentioned the message that sends to the players in the locker room with the contract that he just signed makes absolutely zero sense. And what the earlier caller, Mark, said about the Cousins trade, that one I agree with you. That one needed to happen. Big overrated player, but that contract was just terrible. The return was just even worse. But the way that Kevin Adams unearned arrogance, like you guys also mentioned, mocking the fan base the other day And then just over 24 hours later, does this trade in our faces, especially at midnight, is insanity in its full form. But anyways, Sal and Matt were just talking about movie quotes earlier, so I'll bring up a movie and say, you know who wasn't arrogant when bringing up serious changes like Kevin Adams did this week in a mocking way to his fans and family? Back in 2003, the coach of the Illinois Polytech football team and Tom Baker, when he said he was moving his family back from Midland back to Chicago, he didn't say he felt bad for his family and fans. He said this would make them a bigger and stronger family.
Was that a Cheaper by the Dozen quote, by the way?
I don't know. That's a deep poll.
I feel like that was a Cheaper by the Dozen because he said 2003. I feel like that was Cheaper by the Dozen.
That was Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yes! Steve Martin, baby.
There we go.
So Tom Welling, too, by the way. Superman coming out next month. Tom Welling, Smallville. It's a hell of a poll by me. Yes, I also had a Bridge to Terabithia conversation yesterday with a listener because we were talking about Dune Messiah in the next James Bond movie. I have been on a roll with movies lately.
Good job.
I've been on a roll.
Proud of you.
Feeling good. Feeling really, really good.
Yep.
Hey. It's just I don't know if Adams was trying to mock the fans. Like, that's my thing. I think it's just the way he presents everything will be taken in the worst light.
And it's also not
necessarily... I don't think he's saying it how he means.
But the thing is yeah, you mentioned it, the media coach sort of thing. But again, you pitch to fans about misinformation. You bring up a conversation. You bring up unprompted Matias Samuelson to try to prove your point. And then you do nothing to answer the question itself. Because immediately, I do believe it was Harrington that goes, that's not a no.
Yeah.
Like, just say, I don't have much to say on the J.J. Paterka front right now.
That's the thing. There were so many things to take from the press conference, but one of them, I think for most of us, was Paterka's out.
Yeah. Immediately, everyone's like, okay, so J.J., like, he did nothing to quell those rumors. But also, yeah, it is a form of, I don't know if it's necessarily a form of gaslighting, but it does seem like it's something where you're trying to make this about something else when ultimately that person was proven right. I have to walk back on a ton of smack talk about Frank Saravalli because I was getting annoyed that he was the only one reporting anything about J.J. Paterka on a consistent manner like this. You got me. That's probably the most unfortunate thing about last night is that I had to walk that back.
Yep.
And many people did. Like,
I
had to walk that back, and I'm like, okay, I don't love that.
I felt bad, though.
So I guess we'll see what the return is.
I felt bad, though, for Frankie S. He had the entire report the entire way, and then at the last minute where everyone's just waiting for the return, Elliot Friedman came in out of nowhere.
Oh, that was...
I was like, this was Saravalli's moment.
That was diabolical.
This is his moment.
That was diabolical by Friedman, swooping in to get the actual trade details when Saravalli was the one purporting this the whole time, and then reporting first on the scene that the trade call is happening. And then Friedman's like, hey, here's the deets.
It's tough.
I'd imagine the man was punching air.
I was for him, and I don't even really care for him.
I don't like him, and I felt bad.
I was sitting there going, that's not fair. That's not right. That's not right.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's funny. But.
I'm not a huge fan of him, and even I felt bad in that moment. Oh, I'm like, tough. Oh, that's rough. That's ruthless.
Tough. 803-0550, the number to call. Next up this morning, Lee is on the line.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, actually. Doing well.
Good, good. My feeling on this, I have a couple things here. My feeling on this is the same feeling I had when... You know, I'm just going with my day, like when the Bills were missing the playoffs for 17 straight years. Mm-hmm. It's a spit image of this. I think everyone's sitting there talking about players and coaches and stuff like that, but no one's really mentioned exactly like when Pegula bought the Bills, he was going through coaches. He went through Rex Ryan. Yeah. He went through a general manager. And he finally found the two good eggs, if you want to say, in a basket, with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott that came in and said, we got a plan. Don't you think it's time for Pegula? And everyone's sitting there saying, well, it's Adams. And I do put the blame on Adams. And I am not defending him in any type of way. But the bottom line is Pegula had a hand in this. Where Brandon Bean has, okay, I can do whatever I want. I have full control. And that was, to me, that's one of the reasons why LaFontaine left. Mm-hmm. There's no culture here. And that's the problem with the Sabres. Just as everybody says, well, Josh Allen came to the Bills and changed everything. No, the culture was changing before Josh Allen got here. And I just think you need to get two good heads in there and a good scouting staff. And I'm not sitting there saying Brandon Bean hits on everything. Mm-hmm. He doesn't. But you're hitting on guys with the Sabres and Sam Reinhart, Jack Eichel, you know, J.J. Paterka, and you keep trading these guys away. We might as well be a farm team if this is the case. No one wants to come here.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to come here. And that is the same situation what happened with the Bills until they started changing their culture. And I feel like Pegula has more interest in the Bills than he does with the Sabres. I didn't see Pegula sitting next to Adams the other day, but when there's a press conference with the Bills, Pegula's sitting right there. Pegula's at every drafting, every free agent signing. He is not there with the Sabres. And that's telling me right there, does he even really care?
Yeah, Lee, thanks for the call. This is something that's been brought up a lot this week. I've been on with, obviously, Shulman Bulldog producing their show. This is something that's been brought up a lot with Pegula. Because I think for many of us here in the media, there's this – and I would even say just there's a 50-50 split, I think, with Sabres fans with Pegula. There's a feeling that he cares too much and that his hands are too far into the cookie jar. And then there's a feeling of, does he care at all? And I think the problem is – and Lee brings this up – when do we see him with the Sabres? We don't hear from him. Now, some will say, good. He doesn't really say much that's good anyways when he speaks to the media. But to be fair, after all of these years, there does come a time where I think a lot of fans just want to hear the man give a reason why.
And I'm going to disagree about the proportion. I don't think it's a 50-50 split anymore. It is going to be much more unfavorably toward the opinion of an absentee owner.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't see him. It's as simple as that.
You don't see him.
Why is Jarmo Kekäläinen working from Columbus? Like, is it just logistically? Boy. Well, I would imagine logistically, is it just he needs to take time to buy a home here in Buffalo, or is it, or is this even a long term thing for him? We don't know. We don't know that part of it. But it's a bad optics, to say the least, that he's working from Columbus. It's not good.
It's a tough optics.
And
I'm with Paul on that. That was one of the things I took away from that press conference that really perked my ears up. Where I was like, "What do you mean he's in Columbus?"
And it sounds like an owner that is being cheap.
Mm-hmm.
The Fairburn article really did point out a good amount of these things as well, of how he does try to run something where they don't want to spend to the cap. And I'm sorry.
Some of these trades would also prove
that
point.
This trade also is proving that point.
Yeah.
Terry, if you're dealing with problems with money, then sell the team. You'll get a great cash influx. I'm telling you right now.
You also wonder, too, like is the new Bills stadium.
Ready? Then sell the Sabres.
Yeah.
You'll get your money.
Yeah, it'll help out. You know, I don't know.
Because I'm definitely getting tired of half the fan base having to be tired for 14 years. I'm feeling that frustration. And I'm not saying it as like blaming them for this. No. It's that I have to empathize, and I will empathize.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to feel that with you all. Because it's something you shouldn't go through. None of us should be going through.
It is a difficult situation,
Your escapism should not make you miserable.
No, because that's the thing. Sports, at its most innocent thing, is it's escapism.
And Terry Pegula's ownership of the Buffalo Sabres has had them miss the playoffs more than they had missed.
Yeah,
combined. There have been more years in a row than the Sabres had missed before his ownership combined in their franchise history. A proud franchise.
Yeah.
And you have taken people that watch hockey, love hockey, and they don't care anymore.
It's a bad look. I don't think I've ever said this. I was 2 years ago, I was at the Prospect Challenge, and I ran into Terry Pegula. Said a quick hello, nothing crazy. I was simply a fan at the time. Not at the time, but just at that moment, I was just a fan. And that was during a period where I think a lot of us were excited about the team. And I'm not saying, like, you know, I will always have very not great opinions of sports owners. that's just with every organization. But I will never forget how I felt three off seasons ago or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was three off seasons ago.
Where it felt like, man, they are so fun. And remember this with the Bills? No, we really didn't have that with the Bills. They got good really suddenly, and this has been a strong growth for the Sabres. And it just went away so quickly. And I want to get back there. I still believe that Pegula is an owner that really, really wants the Sabres to do well because he's a hockey guy first. But you can almost imagine from a human aspect, the Bills basically print money for me. And the Sabres are difficult. I don't know what to do.
But also,
throw your hands up in the air.
But if you sell a professional franchise, you get money that is all of a sudden a little more liquid.
Right.
When that deal was finally announced, confirmed last night, smiles on the faces of general managers with interest in Bo Byram. Because all along, Bo Byram was the more likely of those two guys to get traded. But the response from Adams was, if I'm trading Bo Byram, I need a right shot defenseman coming back the other way as part of the package. Well, he gets the right shot defenseman in Kesselring. So now all of these general managers who have interest in Byram but didn't want to have to give up one of their own right shot D are kind of trying to look at things creatively. Okay, well, maybe we're back in on this with Bo Byram. And so the list of teams that would have interest in Bo Byram, it's pretty extensive. It's 6, 7, 8 teams deep. Legitimate players for Bo Byram at this stage.
3D chess.
You better nail it.
3D chess.
You're going to have to nail it.
You don't have a right shot defenseman? I'll go get another one over here. And so I can do something different with you. Darren Dreger on Sabres Live today. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog at Harbor Center. I almost literally did wear shorts here. I mean, it's summer.
Good call not doing
it.
Yeah. All right, I'm out of shape. I'm out of shape on this. I've not, you know, the kids stopped playing 4 years ago now. I've not been putting in the time. And so, you know, I know from previous years being here for this event, which of course we are always happy to do and honored to be a part of the little small part of it, doing our show here. Even though I'm wearing pants and have a long sleeve quarter zip on, I'm feeling the chill.
Yes, my wife was here to volunteer earlier in the week, and she got home and it was, you know, one of those days where it was like 88 degrees.
Yeah.
And she got home and made the point about how cold it was in here and how good thing I wore 4 shirts, 2 jackets and 3 blankets. And I'm like, but that's what you always wear. I mean, that doesn't tell me that much about how I should dress for Thursday.
Right.
But I guess. Here at Harbor Center, Rink 1, the 11-day power play, the WGR team will be on the ice at 6. We're excited to see those guys, including Sneaky Joe and Bulldog son Owen in net. A lot of names, you know. Our boss, Alan, will be out there and some others we look forward to seeing. Got the many of you are going to be familiar with this rink and this scene here. The big Sabres logo at center ice. Where's he going with this? The Red Wings are asking their fans to pick between 2 designs for center ice for this year.
Okay.
It's kind of cool what I've seen so far. It's the 100th year of the original 6 teams.
Yep.
And the Wings are, it's online, one or the other. One is just, you know, winged wheel, red and white. The other one has Hockey Town written across the middle. One thing I liked, of course I'm going to. Like, you like what you started with as a sports fan. 1983, I mentioned that, watching that a little bit of that Sabres-Canadian series last night. What did the Canadian center ice look like?
Tiny little logos on either side. Like, the big circle, obviously, with the dot in the middle, but very small Montreal Canadiens logos. The logo they wear on the sweater.
Right.
And the logos on the ice are, I'm going to comically say, barely bigger than the logo on the crest of the jersey.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, they had 2. Yeah. The Sabres did that for a while,
Sabres
too.
Had that. Boston had that. A lot of teams. At least I'm pretty sure I remember that in Boston. I think the big singular logo, I'm not going to say a pretty recent development, but it definitely changed during our lifetimes watching hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they maybe just didn't have the capability to make a piece of artwork that big that they could put on the ice. I don't know, why it changed, but, you know.
Well, always within all that growth or just how it evolved is how it became a TV show, right? I mean, that's when the Canadians put those logos and the Sabres and the Bruins and those teams did that in the 70s, say, they were never probably thinking at all about cameras.
Marketing, really, barely. I mean, it was,
And then, you know, maybe it was decided, somebody in marketing decided it was better to have it just, why not make the whole ice out of the Sabres logo, really? Right. Why not just, there's probably rule against that, or I mean, else you would do
can
it.
Can you remember how small the Bills logo was at Rich Stadium when they first, I think it was
a helmet.
Compared to now, yeah, tiny.
It was, they had, at least for a while, some of those years, they had the helmet at midfield, like the white helmet where the logo wasn't big on the helmet. And, you know, that evolved too.
Right.
Well, get in there and vote.
We live in a logo world now, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I saw the 100th anniversary, like you're saying, right, the Bruins. And, I mean, I know I can look at that logo and see the subtle differences, and I don't know, maybe someone who's in graphic design would tell you they're not that subtle. But, like, oh, here's our new look.
It looks almost the same.
What are we talking about? Oh, I see. The tips of the B on the outside, like the left side of the B, now line up with the spoke. Thanks. That's it? I looked at it 10 times going, I needed to see them side by side to go, oh, I see the little subtle difference there.
Doesn't seem like you should be able to get away with, here's our new uniform.
Right.
There's going to be some tiny change.
Redesign.
Let that be a fan contest. Try to find it.
Right.
First person who can find the difference in these two logos.
Right.
Make it like that bar game. Well, could be some cool stuff coming from all those original six teams this year. Paterka to Utah. Frank, the story is Utah. Paterka going to Utah for Michael Kesselring and Josh Doan. Like we started today, I'm choosing not to hate it because I guess this is always true. Did I say this about Kozlov when the Sabres got him for Dominik Hasek? Like, there are things you can point to be excited about. And, you know, you've said a lot today, you need something else. This is always how we are with them, and sometimes the Bills too. Like, you need a complimentary move to replenish their offense here.
Right. I've got a wheelbarrow full of disclaimers. But I don't even have to choose to like the players that they got. I think the players they got back fit very specific roles that this team has needed. They did not get equal. I don't think there's any really arguing that they failed to get equal value for Paterka. That's almost universally how it's being talked about and written about, grading the trade, like Joe Yurden talked about last segment and whatever. And like, I get all that. But the Sabres, Kevin Adams, have to try to put a team together that they – it's not an all-star – it's not a stats competition. They needed a partner for power, and Kesselring, I think, is a very credible and good idea to be that partner. A more physical player, not as much offensive upside as you have with a guy like Byram, say, but much more dependable defensively, physical enough, willing to fight if you need it. Like, you know, we have a shortage of that kind of player on this roster all around. So that fits a very specific need, and I think Doan also fills a need in that they are just not overloaded with young, dependable two-way players, 200-foot forwards that are all, you know, good size, reasonably dependable everywhere you put them, and he does have a trait that is above like replacement level. He's got a very good shot. Owen played against him in 2019 at USA Hockey's under-17 national camp.
All right,
and remembers the shot. You know, he was one of the best guys there. It was a real, you know, being the 37th pick in the draft. So, you know, that speaks for itself, I think. The shot is very good. It's not, you know, it's not Tage Thompson, Kulik elite level, but very good. So at least, you know, there's a potential there with opportunity to maybe produce a little more than your average mucker, grinder, forechecker type player. But even if that doesn't produce 15 to 20 goals, I think that role is an important role to have on your team. In a young player, a cost-controlled player, you know, not going out. Jeremy was talking last week, I think, on their show, and he tweeted how what the Sabres had to spend to get Malenstein and Lafferty and Aubé Kubel and whoever, no, it was Krebs because Aubé Kubel eventually wasn't there. But they're spending like $9 million on their fourth line. Florida's fourth line was all like $8.75.
Right.
All, vet, you know, minimum salary guys. And very productive and good. Like, you add together what the Sabres aren't spending to the cap with what they are spending to have what a lot of good teams treat as, like, bargain-type roster spots, and it's tough. So hopefully Doan can, at least for the time being, be someone who, at a cheaper price, gives you good minutes down there. So I like the pieces, but again, the big caveat is you gotta do something else with Byram, presumably, to replace what you gave up in Paterka.
I am ready to hear about it. I'm ready for the breaking news alerts here on that trade.
Paterka to Utah. What's next? Tage to Houston? Sorry, I didn't need to throw that out in the universe. It's not going to happen. We're good. They're just going to make the playoffs. They're just going to make the playoffs and everything's going to be fine, right? Right? Let's go to the phones. Dennis in Lockport's next up. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, guys. Good show. Look, I'm going to say it right here. When they start getting these other markets for this hot NHL, don't be surprised if Pegula just moves our team out of here, because he's been there for 14, 15 years. He told us when he came here, I'm a hockey guy. He doesn't know nothing about hockey. Maybe about a T-shirt and a logo. That's when his wife and him were really good. That's all they ever sold. But Kevin Adams got on WGRZ, told people that when they were talking about the draft, Paterka was authored right on TV. This is a couple days ago. And you guys have been announcing. He basically called the media a bunch of liars. Oh, they're just making up stuff. No. He's the liar. He's not putting any team together. He wants fans in the stands. All Pegula wants is all the property he owns downtown, and he's got a winner with the Bills making him a lot of money. He could care less about the Sabres, because if he actually did want to, he was a hockey guy, he would have put something into it, get the right management to take care of that team and make it a winner like it used to be. I mean, there was a time there wasn't where the Sabres didn't make the playoffs, at least. We may not have went all the way through, but we were at least in the conversation for playoffs every year until after Regis left. And after that, it's been nothing but downhill under Pegula's ownership.
All right.
So I'm going to leave it at that.
Thanks, Dennis, for the call. The point about – I don't even know. There was a lot in there.
I pretty much disagree with pretty much everything he said. And I mean by that, like, he's not moving the team.
No.
He's not looking to move the team. I mean, could he see a scenario where the team gets sold at some point someday? Sure. There's been a lot of rumors about that. I don't think that's happening anytime soon. He's not moving the team. You could be very upset at how the team is run or owned or whatever. I get it. I think you're confusing, Dennis. Unless I'm wrong, I could be wrong here. Maybe Kevin Adams did something separate on Channel 2. I think he's talking about the press conference, and maybe he watched it on Channel 2.
Maybe.
And it was the press conference where we aired it, and he said, there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I feel bad for my fans, for our fans.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking specifically, I think, more about maybe the Matias Samuelson situation. So, yeah.
See, he was, but I really do wonder how much of that was misguided anger from Paterka reporting. Because I just can't believe, I still can't believe from 2 days ago, 3 days ago now, that he thought fans were angry or are upset because they're reading on Twitter that the team might get rid of one of their least favorite players, Samuelson. after it was a question about Paterka, and there was a lot of reporting about Paterka. Mm-hmm. And I really thought that was maybe the source of it, but hey, a lot of it ended up being true, right? Like, maybe not every exact detail happened. There was a report about Chicago considered offering the third pick. It didn't say that they were going to trade the third pick. There was a report, two reports, Frank Cervelli and Renaud Lavoie at the trade deadline, that a deal with the Rangers was close. That might have been gravely exaggerated, but it planted the seed that night of this is a player that could get traded. And months later, it ended up happening. So how much of it really ended up being untrue? Cervelli said earlier in the week that his expectation was he'd get traded by Friday. Well, he got traded by Friday. So misinformation, whatever. You know, like, it again was just not the right note to hit at that point in time. And, you know, to get back to the Paterka trade, though, about this and where they were, their stance, and how the deal ends up happening, I still think the biggest problem here, more than even the players they got back, because I do like things I'm hearing and reading about both the players they got back, but it is the idea that they traded for two players that were not worth J.J. Paterka when they did not have to do it. I don't think they needed to act like this needed to happen this second, that it was we got to deal him, that this is a problem. The player wants out. I think you got to have a little bit more of a backbone. You got to be willing to tell the guy, I have the leverage here and I don't need to trade you. There's one thing missing here. They either believe these players are far more valuable than I do or a lot of other people that are covering the league. Or they just felt like they needed to trade him. And if that's the part that I can't understand, if that's the truth of it, is they knew they weren't getting enough value for him, but they just needed to trade him. They felt like they needed to get him out of here because it was bad PR or something. Should be reading every day about a player that doesn't want to be here. I don't know.
I think at some point, like, if you decide we might have to do this, you kind of have to resign yourself to the fact that we're probably not going to get the true value for him. Like, it's just not going to happen. You're not winning the trade. So you do as best you can with doing that. And it looks like they got good, serviceable, good players here who can help this team.
But you're not even giving yourself a chance to maybe somebody does eventually come at you with a better hockey trade of a one-for-one, or maybe somebody is willing to go Paterka and Byram or Paterka and another piece for their player. Like, those are the only deals I would have ever moved them for. And again, I like these players. Kesselring looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think the value is there.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't think Michael's ever done drugs.
It's Mike Shope.
I don't know if anyone's ever offered him any.
Let's go over some of the symptoms of marijuana use, shall we? You tell me who this sounds like.
It's the Bulldog.
Slow moving. Inattentive. Dull. Constantly snacking. Shows a lack of motivation.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Don't feel bad about answering honestly here, but how much Utah Hockey Club did you watch last year?
Honestly, the game... No, I barely watched that game. No, I watched it. I was in a orthopedic, Excelsior Orthopedics, one of the sponsors of this, waiting room.
The game here?
The Utah game here. It was on TV. I watched that.
Like a Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, on a Saturday afternoon while my dad was getting his dislocated wrist reset.
Ooh.
Yeah. But I did, so I did see it.
Not a lot else?
No, didn't they play... I feel like we were together. No, that was a Seattle game. I watched the game out there, too, when the Sabres played them. But that's it, the two times the Sabres played them.
How did we do? I don't know.
Oh, I know they got beat pretty badly here.
Yes.
Because that was the day after the Palm Trees news conference. Utah 4-1, 5-1, something.
6-1.
6-1, I don't maybe. Know. It was bad.
Utah Hockey Club color vibes here today at the 11-day power play. This is their get up.
In honor of this trade. They knew.
They must have known, yes. Joe Yurden is with us on the Western Hotline from Bleacher Report. Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. How are we doing today?
We are doing well. We did get filled in on the first of the two acquisitions speaking earlier with the Sabres. I imagine you got to listen to the second one. We haven't heard any updates on that. Anything curious from Josh Doan this afternoon, Joe?
Well, it was... I've had a lot of moments through my career, you know, which is very weird to say in the first place, but I've had a lot of moments in my career where you have where you talk to like the sons of players that you watched. This might be the first time where we're in an interview with the son of a player that like I've written stories about and covered and talked to numerous times, and the first thing, you know, he gets asked about his father, Shane Doan, you know, longtime Coyotes, you know, face of the Coyotes, you know, guy. Right. And he goes, yeah, my dad's a big nerd about hockey. He's up on all the stats. And, you know, I'm next in line to ask a question. And I had like that deja vu moment of, I remember having this exact conversation with Shane here in Buffalo a few years ago, where Shane was saying the exact same things about Josh and about what a nerd he is, you know, big on fantasy hockey, all this stuff. I'm like,
right.
And I'm just sitting there. And like, if people had like the whole, you know, the whole panel of everybody that's on this Zoom call there, they would have seen me just like laughing to myself and also dying inside at hearing this because holy cow, man. Like it's stunning, but, great guy. Michael Kesselring couldn't have said enough nice things about him. Great for the room, the whole thing. So there's reasons to feel upbeat after hearing from these guys. If you're a fan, I mean, I'm not a fan. I'm in this for the stories, but like you listen to these guys talk and they're excited. Like they want to, you know, the line's gotten tired, but they want to be here. You want to be part of the solution, the whole thing. So like it's encouraging. It's good. And I think they're both good players. It's just, you know, it's the trade. I think there just needed to be more.
Right. Yeah. They gave up the best player in the deal. Buffalo did. Joe, how much do you know about what unraveled for Peterka here? Like, why did we end up in a place where, at least the way I'm perceiving it, is that, you know, it's being widely said he didn't want to be here. Is there any chance that the Sabres thought we need to change our mix? He's an RFA. We got a decision to make about committing long term. And maybe there are things there definitely are things to not like about his game. Still, though, he is the best player in the trade. What do you know about what happened with Peterka?
Well, you know, this is such a small place that you hear things all the time. And, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that you hear about. But the one thing that always stuck with me about JJ was that he was a big favorite of everybody in the organization, you know, top down, ownership down, like they love them. And, they love the talent. It was a massive pride point for Kevin Adams, you know, drafting him in the second round. And, you know, even at the time when they drafted him, it was like, hey, these guys, this is a great pick. You know, I think they got a guy. And, you know, and it was one of those picks that when it was made, everybody's like, hey, I think they got a winner here. Like this is really good for Buffalo. And it's a great pick. And it's a moment where everybody, you know, scouting Kevin Adams, everybody can be like, yeah, we nailed it. We got the right guy. We made the right pick. We got this down. And those are guys you don't want to let go of. Those are guys, you know, obviously it's a pride point. So you're just like, hey, it's the guy we scouted, we found, we drafted him. Let's keep him. And something changed. Whether it's, you know, the lack of success, whether it's, you know, it's playing, you know, how dealing with, you know, how hard Lindy can be on guys and, or, you know, being asked to defend a little bit better, you know, all these kinds of things where, you know, kind of takes away the fun of playing hockey, which, you know, I guess that's a maturity thing at that point. But when those things kind of pile up and, you know, a guy reaches this point of his career where it's, you know, hey, you know, it's time to sign a long-term deal, that, you know, RFAs are starting to understand that they've got a little bit more leverage than in the past guys used to think they have. And this was a point for JJ to kind of draw a line and say, hey, listen, this ain't working here for me. Like, this might be time to go. And, you know, I don't think Buffalo wanted to let him go. I don't think that's a guy they had any designs on trading. But, you know, when push comes to shove, you know, if a guy's, you know, the magic words are, I don't want to be here anymore, then, you know, so be it. But that's not a trade that Buffalo makes lightly. And I know the return doesn't get anybody overly excited. I mean, you know, listen, Kesselring's going to be really good. He's going to be a very good player for them. He's going to help out power the whole thing. But when you're thinking, you know, and the thing breaks late last night and you start thinking like, oh, maybe they're getting the number four pick. Maybe, you know, maybe there's something else going on here. Maybe, you know, your imagination starts to run wild, and then it's, you know, it's a couple of guys for a guy, and you're like, wait a minute, this is not what we were expecting. So I don't know if it's a case where, you know, everybody gets a little bit too excited about what's happening, and then, you know, the reality of everything kind of lets it down. But like, when you write it all down on paper, it just does not look, the look does not look good for Buffalo, right? Even though it might work in the end. It's kind of like the Savoy McLeod deal last year, where Adams got crushed for it. And yeah, I think a lot of us knew it made sense, but, you know, the wider picture was just like, boy, that's an ugly one. That'll look bad in years, but, you know, so far so good.
With Joe Yurdin, I mean, it's Utah. Maybe if Bulldog only watched two games of theirs, you know, a lot of us didn't see any. And so they're not going to be household names. But that also means that, like, it's not a team where you're winning a lot. It's not Edmonton, for example, where trading these players to the Sabres might be really tough on the players. I can believe it. This could always be true, but I could believe it if these guys on Utah can find some, you know, positives in coming here.
Yeah, and for Michael Kesselring, you know, he made it very clear he's an East Coast guy. And he's played out west his whole career. You know, he used to be in the Oilers system, played in Bakersfield, California, in the AHL. Then he's, you know, he ends up in Arizona. He's playing in Tucson. He's playing in Tempe. And then it's, you know, you're in Salt Lake City. And it's a long way from home. You know, that's not getting to see the family a lot. And, you know, he's not making a ton of money. So it's spending a lot of money to get the folks out there and get them tickets and whatever. But, it's exciting for them because now it's like, oh, hey, cool. You know, family can come and watch way more often. We're going to go to Boston like twice a year because, you know, he's a Boston area guy. He played at Northeastern with Devin Levi. So it's exciting for him and for Josh Doan. I mean, he's the Western guy, you know, played at Arizona State, you know, grew up around the Coyotes locker room his whole life. And, you know, gets drafted by them, the whole, you know, the very honestly cool sweetheart story. But, you know, the old man's been working for the Leafs now for the last couple of years, and we know how close Toronto is, so that's kind of a nice thing. But, you know, it's a situation that offers them a huge opportunity as well. And, you know, it comes down to playing time and opportunity and stuff like that. So that's what gets guys excited. I think leaving Utah now is maybe a little tough because Utah was cooking last year. They've got something good going there, and them trading for Paterka makes a ton of sense. I totally get it. And obviously the view on Buffalo right now is really down. So it would be easy to be really, you know, upset, I don't know, disappointed, whatever. But for these guys, like, this is a chance to show out, and this is a chance to play big minutes. And listen, this is stuff we used to say about the Bills in the past, but if you can get the Sabres to the playoffs after all this, you're a legend. Never mind winning a cup right now. It's just get to the playoffs.
Right.
The one thing that Marc-Andre Grignani got wrong was the timing. You know, they'd been to the playoffs. If he'd come along 15 years later, he could have been a hero.
I certainly, like anyone, can understand being underwhelmed on paper with what the return looks like. And faith is in short supply. The benefit of the doubt barely exists, if it exists at all, when it comes to this management team with the Sabres. But if there is another move coming to replace some or all or even add to what Peterka was offering you offensively, I like the roles that are set here for these players. They've been looking for a partner for power since he got here. It's patently absurd, in my opinion, that it's taken three seasons, but here we are. That I'm optimistic about that. And I think Doan is the kind of player that the league is sort of trending toward, a bigger 200-foot player and, you know, forecheck and all that. The Sabres are not long in that type of guy. And I don't know where his upside ends up. I know he's got an above-average shot, which is helpful. So I like where they slot in, provided, you know, they spend the money they're saving on not paying Peterka, which, again, is saying a lot. So you got to really twist yourself up a bit. But I assume there's a Byram trade coming, and that in some way, shape, or form, he contributes to them finding their way to the top six forward that they've needed for – well, I mean, they definitely did another one last year, and they never got it. But I think, provided there's another move, I like this trade as it stands sitting here today, as long as they supplement.
Yeah, it's, you know, I had to write the winners and losers piece very early this morning for Bleacher Report on the trade. And it's almost like you want to give an incomplete grade for the Sabres, because you're like, well, this is one trade. There's another. There's at least one more coming, assuming. You know, I think we've been assuming since, you know, pretty much since the season ended, maybe even before the trade deadline, that Bo Byram's probably going somewhere else, just because, you know, the fit's not quite right, and, you know, the money's going to be an issue, because, you know, do you pay three defensemen a ton of money? Like, it's, you know, right, the whole thing. But the pressure's on now. Like, you can't not trade Bo, even though keeping him's fine, I guess, but like, you can't, if you're thinking you're trading him, you got to cash in. Like, you have to get that top six forward. There is no escape from that now. It has to be done. And now there's kind of an artificial bar set, because, you know, and Michael Russo at The Athletic wrote that the Wild offered Marco Rossi for Peterka, and the Sabres were very adamant about getting a right-hand shot defenseman, which you can get mad about it, but like, they needed it. It's just, you know, maybe that's not the guy you had in mind, but getting laser focused on that, maybe, you know, I don't know, like, whatever. If it turns out that Byram lands him a guy that nobody has even at the front of their mind for a trade, that turns out to be like I get it now kind of deal. Great. That's perfect, and then the I'm sorry's can come out and be written, and I'll be the first guy up front to be like, hey, my bad, nope, that's a win, you know. But you have to win, but you gotta
do it.
You can't be a guy who, you know, where you're like, I don't know, second, third liner, maybe, I don't know, like a tweener. Like, it can't be that, you know. And you know, or unless it's a guy that's got like the super high upside who just got buried on a really good team, then all right, fine. But like, we're putting too many qualifiers out there as it is, when there's already 1,000 of them in place in case they don't add a top six forward.
You know, on that Marco Rossi point, Michael Russo is a known name. He's been around a long time. But if he's reporting a specific offer involving the name of a player, that guy's getting moved.
Like, oh, yeah.
They're not leaking. You know, they're not answering his call with like, yeah, this is the player we offered Buffalo, unless like, he's not coming back.
Now, here's an 8-year contract.
Right. Yeah, no, yeah, right.
That probably doesn't work.
He's not coming back.
Right.
So maybe he'll be moved somewhere, I would think. And I don't know. Do the Sabres have to be not in the conversation when it comes to him because of whatever Byram would represent to Minnesota? I haven't thought that through, but I feel like he'll probably get traded.
I think if it was like, maybe, you know, I mean, obviously the timelines don't work out, but if this was before they drafted Zeev Bouyam and found their soon-to-be, like, number one puck-moving defenseman, And considering they've already got Brock Faber on the right side, then maybe you could say, like, hey, Bo Byram, hey, how about it? Like, you guys want to get rid of Rossi. You're not happy with him. Like, we'll take him. But I think the role that Bo is looking for probably isn't there for him in Minnesota. And I think Rossi would drive some of the fan base crazy because he's not a huge guy. He's strong. He's strong as an ox, but he's not big. But, boy, he can score. He can skate. The whole thing. Like, that's why myself included, we're like, boy, they got to run to the podium and draft this guy when they drafted Quinn. And I was like, oh, whoops. Okay, well, all right, that's fine. That's a good pick still, but, you know,
yeah.
Rossi was the other guy in that team that was like, man, he's incredible. And they drafted the other guy from that junior team. But that's not to say that the Buffalo can't be in that discussion, but I think that trade would be a lot different, and I don't know, maybe the fit isn't right, you know?
I feel without just because he's small, painting with too broad a brush, but I said earlier, I feel like Rossi is repetitive of what they already have in their system. I mean, he's an NHL player already with 60 points last year, I recognize, but if you want to make your team over to be bigger and harder to play against, I don't really think Marco Rossi in your top six is getting that done. And I also think he might be a little bit, I don't know, he wants to go somewhere reportedly where he can be a number one center. And I don't know if that's, I mean, he might be a really nice number two, but I don't know about number one center for him, myself. So yeah. I didn't mind that they passed on that. But again, it's with the caveat that the other move happens. Because if it doesn't, then it's going to look really bad that they didn't jump at a guy like him, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, the number one center thing is so interesting because of, you know, Tage had so much success on the wing last year, and you're like, oh, well, is he going to stay there? And it sure seems like that's going to be the case. And, you know, Kulik up the middle, you're like, okay, well, he's really good. Is he a number one center? You know, I think because a lot of us were assuming that he was going to be a winger, given his shot and, you know, the way that he played the game, but, you know, now he seems to be pretty set in as a center, and that's what he's going to be, which, oh, I mean, that's fine. You know, he didn't seem like a fish out of water at all last season. So, like, that's great. But
don't forget Josh Norris, Joe.
Yeah, I all apologies to Josh Norris. I keep forgetting they've got him. But the caveat there, if he's healthy, he's a really great player. And he's got to stay healthy. He's got to, you know, stop walking under ladders or stop crossing, you know, having black cats cross his path and find some good luck there. But. I remember asking Adams at the end of the season if, you know, how he felt about the center position. If, you know, does he feel like that's a, you know, if that's an area he's got to address? And he ran down the list of the guys, you know, Kulik, Norris, you know, the whole litany of guys, McLeod, you know, Krabs, everybody. He's like, I think we're pretty deep at center. He's like, I like our group. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's good, but do you have a number one? And, you know, I think that's the fair question. Because once Tage moves off center and he's not playing center anymore, you don't have a number one anymore.
I feel like if a guy who's sort of mid says he wants to be a number one center, he wants to go to a bad team. It's probably what he's looking at. He's probably not looking at Edmonton or Toronto, for instance.
He would have loved it here, Rossi.
Maybe he would have been perfect. Maybe it'll still happen.
Yeah.
Joe Yurden, Bleacher Report. Joe, thanks for the time.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. 803-0550 on the Paterka trade if you want to get in. We're at Harbor Center for the 11-day power play. Blue by two. With a smidge under 25 minutes to go in this shift. 22-20. Been some good talent on display. There is in almost every shift.
Yes.
Or maybe it is not even almost. This goalie, I love him. I almost said it. This number 11. They're all number 11. But there's one guy in white with like Amherst color pants.
Yeah.
Red and blue that are... You know, he's catching my eye, Bulldog. I'm going to have to start writing stuff down. Although scouting this would be tough. You'd have to go by helmets.
Yes, and very few of the guys have distinctive enough helmets, aside from the founder of the operation here, Mike Lazakowski, who we talked about last time we visited. I think the old school Jofa helmet that he still wears.
Looking forward to that at 6. Sneaky Joe, all your favorites.
Yeah,
Owen.
I'm distracted watching my dopey kid stretch over here at the end of the...
We can change seats because I can't see it, if that helps you. Lines open. We'll be back after the update. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.